funny if that if Halloween Ends ended with the, because Halloween Ends has like a new Michael Myers guy, uh-huh, sort of. But I love that. It would have been great if he simply took that mask and to turn it inside out, and it was just a regular ass William Shatner mask.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be hilarious. Although, fun fact about the original Halloween. Okay, so the original Michael Myers mask, the original shape mask, right? It's the same mask for the first two films. The reason why it looks a little different is one, when, because the decision to make the mask was literally done on the fly. Like, yeah, it was a fucking last-minute decision. Because at this point, you know, Carpenter had only just wrote The Shape. The Shape does this. The Shape does that. He didn't write Michael Myers. He just, in the script, he's The Shape. Uh-huh. In the fucking credits, he's The Shape. But, so, Carpenter didn't even have an idea of what the fucking mask. It was just like a mask. That's why the prop guys just grabbed a mask and turned it. That was. It's kind of amazing that such a last minute decision would have such a vast cultural impact on the landscape of an entire genre. An entire genre was shaped.
I mean,
by a last
I would
minute
even
decision.
I would suggest it's like it might be the most popular Halloween costume.
Oh, easily. I mean, it's. Name
and
the
it,
only
and it was a Halloween costume.
Yeah, the most famous, the most famous. Like I know some people say, "Oh, the Jason mask." Yeah, well, fuck you, because the Jason mask would not exist without the Michael Myers mask.
The Jason mask. The fundamental problem there for me was Friday the 13th. Is I love the Friday the 13th movies, but I do think a major misstep is not keeping him a child.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
Right? Like,
well, he's got to grow up, though.
He doesn't, though, because he's dead.
No, he doesn't die until the fourth one.
No, but he, like, literally dies. They drown him in a lake.
But the thing is, it's not... He survives, though. He just comes back. Like, he survives the drowning. They never found his body. So they never found his body.
I thought the implication is that he's dead.
No, they implied that he was dead because they never found his... Like, okay. It's like, oh, we never found his
so
body.
So he does grow up.
He does grow
so
up.
So how is he doing this? Like, where is he getting, like, nutrients? Does he go to the grocery store? Does
he just kills animals. He just kills... Here's the thing. He follows Michael Myers' suit, like, path by just, like, killing fucking rats and dogs. That's how he lives in the woods.
All right.
But yeah, they never found his body. They even specifically say at the end of the first one that they never found his body. Like, mm-hmm. okay, whatever. And then he just grows up. And then he's, well, we all know, and spoiler alert, Jason Voorhees is not the killer of Friday the 13th Part 1.
So. Yeah, it's his mom.
It's his mom. But that said, yeah, that's an interesting idea.
Totally doesn't make sense now. I always just assumed that the suggestion... is that they drown him.
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's a... What is the word?
Because he is kind of unkillable after that.
Well, he doesn't become unkillable officially until part 6.
Yeah, but they keep killing him in
every movie. Well, they injure him really badly. That's okay. What happens. Yeah, it's not so much that he's hard to kill. I mean, no. He is hard to kill. Mm. But the thing is, it's the people that are doing the killing just do a really bad job of killing him.
So this brings up a really important point to me that I think that film critics have really struggled with horror movies and particularly slashers or splatter films or whatever you want to call them, is that the premise of horror films... or slashers, sorry, is that they only operate because the characters are fundamentally stupid.
Yes.
And I think that, and I love John Carpenter has like an answer for this. And he's like, if you're looking to the characters in slasher films, you're looking at the wrong place.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's not that they're stupid, it's that they're not the point of the film.
Yeah.
You know, like, the characters are disposable.
Yeah.
The point of the film is the technique.
Yeah, that's why he's a fucking master. That's why he did it better than anyone else, is because most people making these fucking movies are absolute idiots.
Yeah, and they want to develop they operate like all sort of traditional films where they want to develop a bond between the audience and the characters, yeah. And they think that bond will lead towards them being more invested when something bad happens to them. But Carpenter takes the opposite approach. He's not trying to get you to connect with Laurie Strode. He's trying to get you to he's putting you in the perspective of the bat.
Yeah.
Right? Like, which is why Halloween is so groundbreaking. Yeah. It's the POV.
Yeah.
And it's not just like, oh, POV, what a cool trick. There's this Steadicam operator, which all of this is true, right?
Yeah, of course.
Like, a lot of the people that don't get credit in these films, I think, actually, well, it's two, right? It's Deborah Hill, who's, like, so behind a lot of this stuff. But it's also Dean Cundey, like, who's the DP for these films. And, like, and this guy was, like, a walking motion picture studio. Like, the reason that Deborah Hill hired him for the first Halloween and he continued to do other films for John Carpenter was because he had a mobile movie van and he had all the equipment.
I did not know that.
You didn't have to rent it. Like, you would just hire Dean Cundey and he had potentially the first Steadicam.
That's amazing. I didn't know.
So the thing that straps your chest, that one's not called a Steadicam. It's called something else.
Yeah.
It's called like a... Oh, man. I have it somewhere in my notes here.
I did not know that.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Well, that makes me like it even more. Because it's just more like, we got to get this done.
Yeah.
We got to get this done.
And people get obsessed with the technical aspect of it as like a part of the craft divorced from the story. But in fact, they're intrinsically tied.
Yeah.
Because putting you in the perspective of Michael Myers removes you from the usual story, which is like sort of like a horror story, which is you're the victim and you, like, you know, anyone could come out of any corner kind of thing. Hmm. And it like completely flips the reverse.
Yeah, I mean, it's Dean Cundey, one man mobile studio. Yeah. I love that.
He also shot Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Oh, well, fucking hell. Jesus Christ.
Do you want to hear some more of his movies?
I mean, you know, Robert Zemeckis is hitting, like, look, I love Robert Zemeckis.
I do. I love Bob.
He's Bob. Bob Zemeckis. There's so many great stories of Bob Zemeckis, but sorry. I think we've told a couple of them.
Yeah, we have.
We love Bob Zemeckis.
Yeah.
But what were we going to say? What do we got?
Well,
Dean Cundey, let's go.
Psycho 2, just because we mentioned Richard Franklin, Romancing the Stone, the Back to the Future trilogy.
He did all of them?
All of them.
Good Lord.
Roger Rabbit, Roadhouse, which now in retrospect, I'm like, you know, that movie is pretty beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, for being like a B kind of movie.
Dude, Roadhouse.
Roadhouse is wild.
It's a fucking crazy
And then here movie. It gets really interesting. Jurassic Park.
Get the fuck out of here. You did not say that. He did not direct Jurassic Park.
Hell yeah, Jurassic
That's
Park.
Nuts. Mm-hmm. That's okay, why is everybody talking about Deacon but ignoring Dean Cundey? That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's really wild.
He did Halloween, Back to the Future, the trilogy, and Jurassic Park.
Jurassic Park, also Apollo 13.
Fuck.
What Women Want.
Okay.
Garfield, the movie.
Oh, my God.
Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves.
Okay, well.
It went downhill after that. But
okay, well, fair enough.
Casper.
Casper's good.
Krippendorf's Tribe, potentially the most offensive film ever made.
We gotta have a blackface month. That's what we need to do, is a blackface month. Krippendorf's Tribe, Soul Man, Tropic Thunder, and The Jazz Singer.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm missing another one.
A phone call. Hold on.
Oh, Trading Places. Another great one. Dean Cundey. That's fucking crazy. I mean, to be honest, how do you go from Jurassic? How do you go from Back to the Future? I mean, those are all. I mean, sorry, you're just blowing my mind there for sure.
Yeah, he did The Holiday, another Nancy Myers. Because What Women Want is Nancy Myers, right? Or is it?
I don't know. I'm sorry, my knowledge of romantic comedies is very limited.
What Women Want is not a rom com, though. It is like a demented film.
Well, aren't all rom coms demented?
Yeah, but like in a different way. It's like,
is that the one with Mel Gibson?
Yeah, Mel Gibson.
Is that the one where it's like
enough set?
Is that the one where it's like he is like obliged to do whatever Helen Hunt wants or something? Is that the one?
I don't know why I'm blanking on it right now. Oh yeah, it is Nancy Myers.
But that's the plot, right? I remember the trailer. It's like it's kind of like Liar Liar, but
oh no, you know what it is. It's that he can hear what they're thinking.
That's what it was. Mm-hmm. There's like a weird thing.
Yeah. And so it kind of falls into that genre, that subgenre that I really like.
Oh no!
It's kind of like a subtext of that stuff because it's not time travel.
Now, what is? No, wait, can you for the uninitiated? Okay,
and just to be clear, I do not like this genre. I just think it's crazy that these movies are viewed as romantic when they're the equivalent of sexual assault, and maybe not even
metaphorical.
Sexual assault.
Can we? Let me just reiterate. Metaphorical.
Yeah. Whatever.
Okay. Literal.
These people learn the traits of the person that they're interested in's ideal male, and then they travel back in time to perform all of those things for them, and then eventually sleep with them.
I think the word is, I think it's more manipulation than that it is force.
Okay, whatever you want to call it, bro. Don't be an apologist.
I'm not. I'm just saying.
I'm saying Groundhog's Day. I'm saying About Time. And I think What Women Want is probably right up there.
I don't know. That's a hot take, right? That is a very...
What Women Want is a different subsex because it's like subsex.
Subsex. Yeah.
It's a different subtext because it's like he's privy to this
information. Wait, can I just hear you say that women are a subsex?
No.
I think that's what I just heard.
I would never.
You know what women want.
I know what they want.
Okay.
They don't want to be called a subsex. Sarah said she just woke up.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you know she starts all of her sentences with just?
I didn't know that. I think I just found that out. Yes. Yeah. So she will not be joining us.
She won't be.
Okay.
He also shot... And this is... By the way, this is Dean Cundey. This is on top of the fact that he shoots all the John Carpenter films. So he shot, like, Big Trouble in Little China, Thing.
Okay. Oh, like, my God. He shot The Thing.
I know, dude. That is crazy. That is a job I wouldn't want as a DP. That is a tough job.
The Thing?
Mm-hmm. Season of the Witch, too.
Yeah, I mean, those are all fucking great movies. God, Dean Cundey. Where's the Dean Cundey bootleg merch? Damn, we gotta make Dean Cundey bootleg merch.
Who's the guy, you know, this brings me back to the Coen brothers, because obviously, like...
Barry Sonnenfeld.
Yeah, it's Barry Sonnenfeld first.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the movie where they changed to Deacon? Is that Fargo?
I think it's Fargo. No, Barton Fink. I think it's Barton Fink.
You're right.
Barton Fink and then Fargo.
Because Sonnenfeld goes off to be his own director.
He does The Addams Family's 1 and 2.
Men in Black.
I mean, you know what? The first Men in Black was good.
Dude, it's good.
It's good. I rewatched it. It holds up.
The visual world of it is good.
But, dude, Addams Family Values?
Fuck. I'm not a big Addams Family guy.
First Addams Family is whatever. Dude, but you got to rewatch Family Values. That shit is wild.
Did Tim Burton do an Addams Family movie?
No, he did the Wednesday Show.
Okay, because me and Sarah decided to try out the Wednesday Show.
It looks awful. I haven't watched it.
The first episode, and it's like such a Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Like, from the very beginning, you could tell there's like models and shit. And I was like, damn, did he do any of the other ones?
No, it's all Barry Sonnenfeld. Well, I don't know who did the third one with Tim
Burton. That's kind of weird for like a bigger director to pick up something later in the franchise.
It's a weird... I mean, I just feel like... I think maybe... I don't even know why he didn't do Addams Family Values. I mean, he was probably too big for it at that time.
Yeah.
Because by the time the first Addams Family Values that came out, he had done Batman and Batman Returns. So he's like, that's beneath me. Is my thinking. But by the way, I watched Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Not bad. Not gonna lie. I enjoyed it more.
I think you had a stroke though. You said it twice. It's just Beetlejuice, right?
Ha ha ha.
Oh, it's Beetlejuice. It's not Beetlejuice Roman numeral 2.
No, it's called Beetlejuice.
It's not Beetlejuice: Beetlejuice.
It is not.
It's not Beetlejuice 2.
No, it's Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Weird.
I think there's a comma. Beetlejuice: Beetlejuice.
There's a comma? Oh, you got to say the comma. All right,
Beetlejuice: Beetlejuice.
Okay.
Honestly, it's not bad. There's some weird things. You're like, that doesn't make any sense, but that's okay.
No, I liked it too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not good.
No, it's not good, but...
The world is good.
The world building is intact, and there's some interesting ideas. So, yeah, that's really all I could say about that. I was surprised. I thought it was going to be absolute horseshit, because Tim Burton hasn't done anything good in, like, fucking 20 years.
Yeah. You know what I particularly hate that he gets a lot of, like, sort of a pass on is, like, the gothic stuff.
Oh.
Like, dark.
Oh,
what is it? Dark Shadows?
The Dark Shadow. All that shit, though, man. That's one of the things. It's like, He was a great director. He really was.
And Big Fish, obviously, is like the biggest misstep of all time.
That's where it all started to go downhill. The last decent...
I don't think we should ever show Tim Burton movie.
We're never going to show... No, maybe Ed Wood.
Ed Wood's good.
Ed Wood's the... It's his best film.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
What's better? You Edward Scissorhands? No. Come on.
What is too sentimental for me.
No, Edward is his best film. It's fucking perfect.
I'd say Batman, probably. Just because...
Yeah, Batman's really good, too, but...
Batman's really good because... I
like murders. Okay,
you know, I'm glad you brought it up because we saw Superman recently.
Okay.
Like about a month ago.
Yeah.
And while I think that Superman, I would say the recent one that came out, James Gunn, is the first Superman movie to get both sides of the coin, the kind of like genuine sincerity of Superman, but also the silly nature of it.
Yeah.
I haven't seen a Batman movie do that since Batman. So while Dark Knight, I think, is great and it's gritty,
sure,
it doesn't have one comedic moment. Like, not one silly moment.
Well, there's some moments in Batman and The Dark Knight
that are silly?
The scene where he leaves the hospital, when Joker leaves the hospital and he sets off the timer and it's not working and he's like, trying to get it to work.
That's more,
It's silly.
No, but I mean like the kind of like
goofy. You're thinking goofy. So, yeah, goofy. It's not goofy.
Yeah.
There's no goofiness.
Yeah.
Because Batman 1 and Batman Returns.
Oh, don't even get me started on Batman Begins. What an overrated piece of shit that movie is.
Also, I said Batman Returns.
Oh, sorry. Okay, yeah.
No, Batman.
I am not a Batman Begins fan. Oh. The whole Ra's al Ghul, training in the mountain shit.
Oh, well, you know,
And then even the last scene with the fucking train car, I was just like, this is so
real. Tacky. I mean, yeah, I like Batman Begins, but it's, you know, it's...
Oh, you know, actually, I changed my mind.
What?
If you view, let's say you could take them all, all the Nolans, and put them together as one film.
It's the best. It's the best Batman movie.
They have all the aspects, because Bane is the goofiness.
Oh, you think darkness is your ally?
Yeah.
I was born in the dark. You were simply...
Wait, I just heard that someone is going to be playing Bane, and I was really excited.
Who's going to be playing Bane? Is it Tom Hardy again? It'd be so good.
No, it was someone silly.
God, really?
Like Patton Oswalt or something.
Dude, Patton Oswalt's Bane would be incredible.
Okay, sorry. Back to
Halloween now. I can't get the Tom Hardy. So good.
Okay, back to Halloween 2. Oh, so there's these things that Rick Rosenthal does, which I think are interesting, because, like you said, a lot of people admire Halloween 2 because it sort of perfects the technique of the first film. And delivers more on the gore side, even so much so that it kind of elevates the movie to a splatter film. Like, like I would argue that the first Halloween film is a very traditional slasher in a way, even though it breaks a lot of ground in other ways. Yeah. Like, it's almost like Italian. Like, if it, you know, like if it was called like La Notte di la Morte.
Hey,
you can totally see it, right? Like, it could be a giallo. And even for as far as that, like, it's not a particularly gruesome film.
No, not at all.
This one kind of ups the ante with that. And, like, what I think was interesting when we were watching it down in the basement is that, and I noticed that, like, in a lot of shots, if you take out the POV ones, which were in both films, in a lot of shots, it foregrounds him more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There's some really funny shots.
Which is like Rick Rosenthal talked about it. He was like, that's my own style that I lended to it. Like, I didn't want him to be this figure in the background all the time.
Yeah.
I tried to, like, bring him more into the frame. And it makes for these really funny moments. Like, we laughed out loud a couple times when he's, like, really close to the camera, like, right up behind someone.
Yeah.
where he's just kind of like lurking, like he has a lurker energy to him.
Just that shot when he takes that knife in the background, that shit still cracks me up. He's just like standing there like, whoop.
In the kitchen, it's like this brightly lit kitchen. I think that maybe that's what it is. It's that he's in the darkness all the time. So like the classic, you could even say like Dean Cundey shot. The classic Dean Cundey shot in Halloween 1 is when he steps into the blue light. Yeah. Right? It's like pitch black.
And then he just his face slowly appears.
The light from the window appears, and it's the face is illuminated in blue.
Yeah,
it's like one of the most iconic shots of all time, and. And this one, it's like stepping into the 1970s kitchen in the bright-ass kitchen it's light as the hilarious. First time
the
you
first
see him.
The first time you see him. It's hilarious. Because the original, you don't really fully see him until like fucking 45 minutes into the film.
That's pretty funny, dude.
I don't know. But, yeah, Dean Cundey's shit. The mythology of Michael Myers, though, that's what killed it. That's what fucking killed it. They talked about it a little bit in part two, very briefly.
No, it's an acceptable amount in part two.
Yeah, it's like, fucking Loomis is like, the druids believe that blah, 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 blah. And that's it. That's all you get. The druids believed in Samhain or Samhain. Samhain. I think it's called Samhain is when I because that's okay. That's someone who I don't know, somebody fucking told me that, but Samhain, as us filthy Americans pronounce it, it's Samhain in Irish, in Gaelic. We'd be celebrating.
I think Gaelic is the written language. It's Irish when you speak
whatever. Fine, we'll be celebrating Samhain this evening. I think is how basically it comes down. Which I think is funny because, you know, Donald Pleasance is, you know, a fucking a UK fellow, but he still goes, oh no, it's Samhain.
He should know.
He should know. He's fucking Donald Pleasance.
But I don't know if you know this, there's sort of a complicated history between the English and the Irish.
Is that right? Mm. I didn't know that. Mm. I thought they were all the same. No?
Is that how it goes? It turns out that they had some problems in it.
In it. Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow, that's news to me. Should we play some music? We're gonna play some Van Morrison.
I got here, pee,
actually.
So.
I'll show. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we can play some music though.
Please don't play Van Morrison.
Oh, okay. God damn it.
That's fine. Is there a good Van Morrison song? Maybe that could be the purpose of this radio show. We find the one
good. here's one. Fine. This is actually a song by them. So here we go. Let's go.
That's the group he was in before. Yeah. They're kind of good.
What the fuck? There we go.
This is them, really? Yep.
baby leaving. All that midnight train.
My God, the only time you'll hear us play Van Morrison on basement radio.
To be fair, that is not Van Morrison exclusively. It is his band before he became anti-vaxxer, which is a band called Them.
It still sounds the same as all of his music.
Dude, look, before he became a fucking Brexit anti-vaxxer, Van Morrison was amazing.
Sure.
He was. Just got some bangers. Gloria, you know, come on, great song, Gloria. Energy. It's my Van Morrison voice. Pretty good. I think I nailed that.
We forgot to talk about Nick Castle.
Nick Castle. Tell me about Nick Castle.
Dude, so he's obviously known for playing The Shape.
Yep.
And John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yep.
But he co-wrote Escape from New York. I did not know any of this.
I didn't know he co-wrote.
He is the director of The Last Starfighter, which is why, after seeing Halloween 2, you know, which he wasn't
yeah.
the shape in, he discovered this guy who has, like, literally not been in much. Sorry, what's his name? He plays the EMT guy, Lance Guest.
I would have guessed that.
He plays the EMT guy that's always, like, creepily touching Lori while she's sleeping.
That guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
That guy is the star of The Last Starfighter.
You know, here's the thing. I've never seen The Last
Starfighter. God.
I've never seen it.
Okay, The Last Starfighter is, like, the perfect example.
Is Mark Hamill in that? Who's in that? All right, well, whatever.
Is he?
I don't know. I think he is.
Maybe, but it's the perfect example of the most forgettable 1980s sci-fi Star Warsy movie.
Okay.
But because of the craze at the time, it was, like, really revered.
Yeah, I know a lot of people talk. Mm-hmm. It's that weird. There's that whole string of movies in the fucking late 70s and 80s where things had to be the last something. The mm-hmm. last horror movie. The last picture show.
The last Airbender.
The last. Everything had to be the last. Yes. Why did everything have to be the last something?
Yeah.
Is there a first something?
A first. Well, our movie, Basement One.
There you go. Basement One. Mm-hmm. That should be the first Basement movie. The second Basement movie. The third. That's it.
No, Halloween. Sorry. The Last Starfighter is about a kid played by Lance Guest, a teenager, who is the best at playing a video game where you're like a space starfighter fighting aliens.
Yeah.
That... the video game exists so that the war that's happening in the galaxy or whatever, uh-huh. in a galaxy far, far away, can recruit you to be an actual starfighter.
Isn't this the plot of Ender's Game?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's Ender's Game. I love that they just straight up like, hey guys, okay, I got an idea for a movie. Okay, check it out. There's this guy who works at a fucking computer warehouse place, but he's also secretly a hacker at night.
Oh, don't get me started on Ender's Game, dude. Because I think Ender's Game, for as much of a weird Christian that guy is, Orson Scott Card,
uh-huh.
it is a phenomenal book.
Never read it.
It's his only good book. I've read the Ender's Game series.
How many Ender's Games are there?
I think there's... four of them.
Is one of them called The Last Ender's Game?
No, the last one's called, I think, Speaker of the Dead. And they're all, like, they're all, you know, worth reading, I think. They're uh-huh. fun. But the first one is a good book. And it really sucks that The Last Starfighter is actually better than it. Because The Ender's Game film is so frustrating to watch because not only is it bad, but you can tell the story is so good. You know when you go like are watching a movie and you're like, God damn it, this story is brilliant.
Yeah.
Like that these kids think they're playing a video game, but they're actually murdering people. Like it's so powerful.
I'm actually trying to think of other instances in which the story is better than the movie. Where like you're watching a movie like, fuck. Yeah. You ruined this fucking concept.
The only thing I can think of is it happens with plays a lot.
Yeah.
Like Closer or whatever. It was just like a legendary play.
The movie's terrible.
Yeah, it's like unwatchable.
Oh, it's so bad. Mm-hmm. Closer is bad. I think I have dark memory. Like I have bad because I remember watching Closer and Juno in the same year. So I just kind of, those two are basically the same movie in my mind, even though I know they're not literally the same, but to me, they both occupy the same emotional headspace, and they're both horrible. You know what I mean? It's like, whenever I think I'm in a bad situation, I always think back like, fuck, this is awful, but you know what? At least I'm not sitting down watching Juno and or Closer. That's the only good thing about both of those movies is that I can always think back and think, as horrible as something I'm going through, I'm at least not watching those movies again. You're like, oh, fuck, I fucking broke my leg.
We should do a month that are like our least favorite
movies. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
We'll watch Juno.
No.
Ender's Game.
First of all, neither of those movies are on VHS.
Yeah, that's so why they're bad.
Yeah, that's probably why they're bad. I mean, not all movies. That's one of the many. I think if you were to try and put those movies on VHS, the VHS format itself would just disintegrate. It would self-destruct because it knows better than to align itself with such garbage. I can't speak to Ender's Game because I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
But the other thing stays true.
It's not terrible. But anyway, so I'd be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the Halloween 2 murders because this is like some Tipper Gore shit that came to life at the time.
Is that right?
So on December 7th, 1982, Richard Delmer Boyer of El Monte, California, murdered Francis and Aline Harbitz, an elderly couple in Fullerton, California, leading to the trial People versus Boyer. The couple were stabbed 43 times by Boyer.
Good Lord.
According to the trial transcript, Boyer's defense was that he suffered from hallucinations in the Harbitz residence brought on by the movie Halloween 2, which the defendant had watched under the influence of PCP.
Wow.
Marijuana and alcohol, which to me is like, if you're on PCP, marijuana, and alcohol, you don't really need anything else.
Yeah, that's fucking crazy. That is a crazy, crazy thing to blame it on. It's not my fault. It's not the PCP cocaine. It's the movie. That's fucking nuts.
Yeah. So the film was played for the jury in the trial. Which I would have died to watch a jury watch Halloween.
Oh, my God.
Because they would have had a good time.
Yeah, it was great. Not guilty. If I was in a trial and that was what I had to go through during the jury trial... Man, that guy would not guilty, straight up.
But a psychopharmacologist pointed out various similarities between its scenes and the visions the defendant described.
Wow. Wait, what happened to the guy? Did he get...
Boyer was found guilty and sentenced to death.
Wow.
The incident became known as the Halloween 2 murders, and it was featured in a short segment on TNT's Monster Vision, hosted by Joe Bob Briggs.
This is Joe Bob Briggs here telling Tipper Gore to go fuck herself. Love Joe Bob Briggs. The legend. He is the hillbilly Elvira. That's what he is.
A lot of critics came to the defense of horror films, you'd be pleased to know.
As they should.
One of them being Thomas Sipos, who said, it would be silly, after all, to ban horror films just because Boyer claims to have thought that he was reenacting Halloween 2, or to ban Cars because Texas housewife Clara Harris intentionally ran down and killed her husband, another famous story of the year.
Well, there's also the Twinkie defense.
Nor does it make sense to ban otherwise useful items such as drugs or guns just because some individuals misuse them.
Yeah, well, there you go.
I don't know about guns, but drugs...
Drugs, no. I mean, to be fair...
PCB should probably be banned.
I guess. Oh, wow. Fucking shit, man. I didn't realize I was sitting with a right-winger over here.
I just, like, I think about all, I'm like in favor of recreational drugs. Like, my niece just went off to college. And she was like, do you have any advice for me?
Take PCP? Is that what you told her? Like,
don't take drugs to be more productive. Take them for fun.
That's pretty good advice. That's pretty good advice. Okay.
And so, like, I'm anti-Adderall, but I'm pro-speed.
Dude, Adderall and speed are both fantastic, so I'm anti-neither.
No. I don't like... Adderall is capitalist.
No, but you don't like Adderall. Here's the thing. I like being productive while I'm high. I enjoy it. It makes me happy.
No.
So, the end of the day, shouldn't...
It makes you happy because you're playing into this capitalist fantasy.
No, I enjoy...
Oh, wait. We got some people in the chat. Okay, hold on. I missed a lot.
Okay.
Hello, basement. This is Cheeto. Nita Mitsu Mask. Roger Rabbit the Goat. Bobby Z... No, Mel Gibson can hear women's thoughts. Also, Eternal Sunshine. Tim Burton Dumbo, though. Dark Knight is kind of like a goofy movie. But it's all Cheeto. Bobby Z is Bane. Well, that's a good call.
Bobby Z? Who's Bobby Z?
I'm thinking of Bobby Lee. Who's Bobby Z?
I don't know.
Bob Zemeckis is Bane.
That'd be good.
Matthew Berry... Matt Berry Lego Bane. I think that's real. Confirmed.
Who the fuck is Matt Berry?
Matthew Perry?
Matthew Perry's been dead. the reanimated corpse of Matthew Perry is Bane.
Choose your next impression very carefully.
What was my impression?
No, Mitsu Mark Hamill is in Star Wars. Basement minus one is the prequel. Oh, yeah. Oh, Basement minus one. That's good.
Basement minus... Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Like God. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I thought Closer was about the Dennis Cooper book. Oh, I think it's a play. It was first a play.
Whatever. It's
it
fucking,
might have been based
it's
on
It's trash
book.
Is what it is.
And then he says, I would hate to see Mitsu on Adderall.
You've seen me on Adderall.
Cheeto has?
Oh, Cheeto hasn't.
But my point is to not be productive.
But I like being productive. No, like it makes me happy
because you're a capitalist.
Just because I like, just I consider myself more of a hustler with an A.
Oh yeah,
because I'm for the people.
The myth that was told to all poor people to be a hustler.
Here's the thing: I don't like relaxing. I don't enjoy it.
You should work on that part of yourself.
Just saying. I think I don't find relaxing. To be relaxing.
Is that why you can't sit in your chair?
That's exactly why. I'm not comfortable if I'm relaxed.
Cheetah says Luca is for the people. Thank you, Cheetah.
I am also for the people. I'm so many different people.
You
want to
keep the people slaves.
That's not true. No, I am for the people. I'm a man of the people.
Enslaved to society.
I was on KQED today. That's how much for the people I am.
I'm sure you said some super romantic garbage.
I did, because I'm for the people. Romance is for the people, folks. It's the truth.
Okay, all right. So do we want to talk a little bit about the other movies we screened?
Well, we only really watched Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 3 of the Dream Wars, which we don't really have too much... We'll talk about as much as we can, because... Here's the thing. As much as I love the Halloween films, and as much as I love Evil Dead, and as much as I love Friday the 13th, my first love in terms of horror movie franchises will always be Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street is my favorite horror movie franchise through and through. Sometimes I get some of the details mixed up here and there, but as a whole, as like a singular work of art, and I say this very, very strongly, I do consider the Nightmare on Elm Street series as a whole a work of art, legitimate art.
I agree, and I can't divorce myself from the person that I am. And the only reason I'm saying that is I've always been a Freddy person.
Yeah.
I just, like, anytime someone asked me, they'd be like, Jason. This is, like, common horror geek shit.
Sure.
He'd be like, Jason... Freddy or Michael Myers, I'd always be Freddy.
Freddy.
Because there's nothing scarier than... It's essentially sleep paralysis, right? Like,
it
you
is.
Can't defend yourself if you're asleep.
Yeah, well, he is this... From a fantasy standpoint.
Yeah.
He is the true boogeyman. He is the...
From a mythological standpoint. Yeah, like something about those films, when you're watching them, they captivate this, like... It's like this ancient fear.
Yeah.
You know, like, and I do think that it's really rare. Halloween is another one. Friday the 13th, I would say less so. It's rare for the first film to be so phenomenal. Like, Nightmare on Elm Street 1, to me, is still my favorite Nightmare on Elm Street
film. It's one of the greatest horror films of all time.
Yeah.
My personal favorite is still Dream Warriors, but that doesn't mean that I know. Yeah. I know
Dream Warriors, the only thing, watching it again with you, because I had the different memory of it as a child, and I've seen it since then. But
sure.
But like watching it again with everyone in the basement, I thought that there wasn't anything scary about it.
Yeah.
Whereas the fine line that the first one walks is that it's scary.
Yeah.
It's not as silly because they haven't refined the Freddy character as much, but it still has like silly moments.
Sure.
And I think it's really rare for those two to exist in the same film. I would say Evil Dead is another example.
Sure. Yeah, the first Evil Dead is not... I mean,
it has both.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, the first Nightmare on Elm Street film is... fucking flawless. It's a goddamn masterpiece, and there's nothing I can say or anyone can say to take that away. I just say personal preference, part three, but I will always love and respect the first one, and they all offer something different. You know, some of them are better than others. Like, we all know that technically speaking, Freddy's Dead is the worst. No, the worst Nightmare on Elm Street film was the fucking Michael Bay reboot. That shit is garbage. It's fucking garbage, which is so weird.
Which I don't even know what it's called. Is it called?
It's just called The Nightmare on Elm Street. It's called The Nightmare on Elm Street. The only interesting thing about the Michael Bay produced reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street is it's the history and casting behind it, because the guy who plays the new Freddy Krueger in the Michael Bay produced is the guy
from Rorschach.
I'm blanking on his name.
Yeah, it's a three name.
Yeah, it's like some. Anyway, that guy, he auditioned to be the original Freddy Krueger.
Wow.
He went into the auditions, but here's the fun fact. He went into the auditions for the first Nightmare on Elm Street film. He auditioned for Freddy, but his friend who came with him to just accompany him on the audition.
Oh, I did not know this.
Was a little known actor by the name of Johnny Depp.
Amazing.
Johnny Depp went with his friend to the Nightmare on Elm Street audition, not expecting to be cast in the night. He just went in because Buddy told him to come with him. But it kind of went full circle. So I appreciate that aspect of the production history of it. I even watched the Never Sleep Again 5-hour documentary.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
It's fucking fantastic. I love the mythology. I love Wes Craven. He's fucking brilliant. He's one of the greatest artists of all fucking time. He's made some missteps. That's fine. But as a whole, I think he's unspeakably brilliant. And I love his entire... I love what he birthed into the cinema, the horror cinema world, cinematic world with Freddy Krueger. The thing about Freddy Krueger, though, that's so fast, is that it's literally born from Wes Craven's own personal, like, hell, right?
Right.
Like, the embodiment of his own personal childhood trauma, it's all collapsed into the Freddy Krueger character, which he's explored in other areas. For example, the name Krug itself, right, was the name of his childhood bully in middle school. It was a guy named something Krug. He just went by Krug, but he was like the local street tough who he actually had used the name Krug before in Wes Craven's first film, Last on the Left. The main antagonist was a guy named Krug.
Yeah.
So he's used that name over and over and over time throughout his career to embody as his own personal boogeyman.
Uh-huh.
Now, the other aspects of the Freddy Krueger character himself, the janitor at his middle school where he was tormented by Krug was a guy who wore a brown hat and a shitty brown and green red and green sweater all the time. That was the school janitor who he always thought was fucking terrifying.
Right, I remember that. That's
yeah. Funny. So I just love that the mythology of Freddy Krueger is born from someone's own personal childhood trauma, which makes that character that much more, I think, profound.
Well, so the reason that I like it is it walks this really fine line, and I was trying to talk to someone about this at the screening, but they were like a parent and their kids were there.
Oh.
And so I think it was maybe the wrong move.
Oh, yeah.
But I do think that what makes Freddy perfect for to build a whole franchise off of is the fact that he walks this really fine line of what's acceptable.
Yeah.
So, like, he is a child murderer, which I'm not saying is acceptable.
No.
But
that wasn't his original
Yeah, but he's not a pedophile. I think this is an important distinction, like, or at least never hinted at in the film.
It is hinted at.
It's hinted at, but it's never explicitly said.
It's never explicitly said, but it is hinted.
But I think that's a very important move, because it is a step so far that you'd lose the audience, I think.
Well,
because it moves it into a camp of more, of less camp. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
And the fact that he is just a murderer is kind of like it pushes him towards more like, I don't know. It's this really weird line that you walk with, like, these films, because you can't have someone that's like the most evil everything.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Here's the thing, though. Mm-hmm. In the original Nightmare on Elm Street script. Mm-hmm. Freddy Krueger was explicitly stated as a child.
Okay, I've heard this before. No, but keep going.
Basically, yeah. The producer's like, bro, you can't do this.
But it's one of those things, right? We're always talking about these dumb producers, but I actually think that's a good move.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right. I think it was smart on the producer's part to be like, you can't fucking do this, man.
Yeah.
And you could just sell Wes Craven's like, what do you mean? Why not? He's like, bro.
Because it's just as bad. Like, it's bad to be a child murderer, too. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, but it's weird that they... it's not weird. I get it. I just think it's funny that you know that this conversation was held at some point during the production. And you can just see Wes Craven go like, I don't know what the big deal is, guys. But thankfully, he followed their...
Yeah, it would have taken the franchise in a really weird direction.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the thing is, it is implied. There are other things that happen in the first Nightmare on Elm Street where, like, ooh, okay. Like, I remember specifically there was a scene where, like, Freddy Krueger, there was just, like, there'd be a couple of shots of just Freddy Krueger just going, like, doing the sexy tongue thing at, like, the teenagers that he's about to murder.
Yeah.
Now, called me old-fashioned. But if I'm about to murder somebody, I'm not going to go make licking delicious sounds before I murder them.
Well, you're not Freddy Krueger.
That's true. I'm not Freddy Krueger. But I'm just saying, typically, you don't make that kind of a mouth sound before do that thing.
All right. No, same. And so, well, I think it's interesting that you brought that up, because, like, the thing with the Nightmare on Elm Street readaptation. Because I think that what we've seen recently, and maybe this is a way to connect it to Halloween, is I thought, like, for the most part, the David Gordon Green films were a very successful continuation of the franchise.
Sure.
Whereas Nightmare on Elm Street has never been able to sort of carry on that story, with the exception of Freddy vs. Jason, which I think is, like, fun.
Yeah.
But you could almost lump it in with the first...
Well... The problem with the reason why they can't reboot the Freddy Krueger franchise is because Robert Englund is so fucking charismatic.
Yeah.
You need the charisma. The reason why you can do the Halloweens and the Jasons over and over again is, like, your character doesn't need to have a personality.
Yeah.
His presence and his aesthetic, that's his personality. Right.
Well, okay, can I suggest some Freddies? Some modern
Please,
day
by all
Freddies?
Means. I have a couple of... It's funny you said, because I have a couple.
Oh, yeah.
You go first.
Okay, Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson. Wow.
Okay, I'm just saying, I never considered Liam Neeson to be a particularly charismatic person, but I just recently watched The Naked Gun.
That shit is...
It's so funny.
It's so fucking holy. I was dying. It's so fucking funny.
Brilliant movie.
Yeah, it's fucking incredible.
And great that the, like, Lonely Island guys did it. Like, they were the perfect choice to continue it. It follows, like, the formula so strictly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not particularly creative. But
it's funny. It works.
Yeah,
it's
nailed simple. The formula. And that's what you kind of need to bring something back to life. Like, David Gordon Green was enough of a horror fan that he knew how to identify the formula, carry it through, and then on top of that, he's such a great director that he added something of his own to it.
Okay, I have a hot take. Okay. I had one pick in my
head. Not Liam Neeson.
Not Liam Neeson. Hear me out. Okay. This sounds crazy, but I think it might work. Because the thing that works with
Chris Rock.
No, that's actually pretty funny. There's a lot of jokes in there that I'm not going to make, so we'll leave that alone.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The reason why Robert Englund works so well is that he's really funny. He's a genuinely inherently funny, charming person.
Okay.
So you need somebody who has
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah, I heard you. What is it? Who is it?
Hear me out. Andy Samberg.
What? That is such a bad take.
Andy Samberg's Freddy Krueger would be fucking incredible. Maybe, okay, and then I would follow up with that.
He doesn't have a dark side.
Here's let me follow that up. Okay. Okay, my original pick was going to be, oh my God, why am I forgetting his name? We just talked about it. All right, you ready for this? If he has to lose weight, though, that's the one thing.
Okay, okay.
If he lost the weight.
Wait, are you going to say what I'm thinking? Hold on, keep going.
Danny McBride. Danny McBride, if he lost.
That's too silly.
If Danny McBride lost 50 pounds, he would be an amazing Freddy Krueger.
I'm going to go ahead and say. Oh, wait. We got one from the chat. Cheetah says Barry Keoghan.
No. No. He's already,
not
no.
funny enough.
Not funny enough.
Not charismatic enough.
Danny McBride's Freddy Krueger. Let's go.
Can I give you another one?
Go.
Louis C.K. It kind of works.
You know what? That's not bad.
Okay.
That's right. Not bad. He's too old, though.
Yeah, he's too old.
A younger Louis C.K., like, like first season of Louis C.K., I think might have worked, actually.
Yeah.
That's actually not bad.
Jerry Seinfeld?
No. Zionist.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that. By the way, these are not the views of Ray. These are the views of Mitsu and Koopa.
First season Louis C.K., that's not bad, dude.
Yeah, it's too... It's
no,
too,
I like
it's
it.
Scorched earth.
Yeah, well, come on.
No, I don't know.
Woody Allen.
No, absolutely not. No, I think that... I know we're playing around, but I really do think it's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible. You just need to find the right guy. You find the right guy. Someone who is inherently, genuinely, profoundly charismatic and funny. And
let's put it out to the chat. Chat, what? Who should be Freddy Krueger in the upcoming Ari Aster Nightmare on Elm Street?
Because the problem is, the thing is with... Okay, I'm trying to...
I wish Zach Cregger was doing Nightmare on Elm Street instead of Resident Evil.
He might... Dude, oh my God. Oh, well, yeah. I'm trying to find this guy's name. What's his name? Okay. All right. Here we go. His name... All right. Jackie Earl Haley. Okay, Jackie Earl Haley.
Yeah.
The problem with Jackie Earl Haley that they went is they went just by his looks.
Yeah.
That's the big...
Well, and also, I think that he was like a pedophile and like little children or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's just like that. That's, I mean, you got to think that's obviously why they chose him. He was like a predatory,
looking
character that everyone had identified as that. That movie was like nominated for Oscars. And,
sure.
And I just think like that's a misstep because you actually want a charisma person. You know, like you were saying.
Yeah, and that's why Michael Keaton's Batman worked so well.
Yeah.
People were like,
Michael Keaton honestly could do it. He's too old now.
Michael Keaton would have been an interesting pick. Actually, that's not bad. Because he's funny.
To think about these people that could have been in movies.
Yeah.
Like,
well, Will Smith was almost Neo, for fuck's sake.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't that crazy?
I can't think of a worse Matrix.
That would have been the worst movie ever.
Mitsu's mouth sound says Goggins. Walton Goggins is
pretty
good.
Damn, that's pretty good.
Wow.
Dude, Goggins.
Goggins is pretty good.
Dude.
And he's having a moment right now.
Dude, Walton Goggins is Freddy Krueger?
He might almost be too famous.
Yeah, I mean, if you had gotten Walton Goggins circa Django Unchained, that would have been more in there. But that's good.
That's a good one.
Damn, that's really good.
Okay, wait, what do we got? We got Cheeto says Goggins is a good idea. He also says Patti LuPone as Freddy.
Who's that?
Who's Patti LuPone?
Who's Patti LuPone?
If it's Ari Aster, then it's going to be Joaquin. True.
Yeah.
Or it could be...
Patti LuPone is a woman.
What about Pedro Pascal?
He's too famous. Also, he's too good looking. There has to be, they have to be kind of weird, like a little weird looking, which is why Walton Goggins works.
Walton Goggins works. The veneers.
The veneers, the fucking receding hairline, like the doe-eyed look on his face all the time.
Yeah, Goggins is good. God damn it. That's really good.
I don't know, man.
So who's directing this film?
All right.
Oh, first of all, who's Nancy?
Nancy would probably be, you know who would be a good, I think, because it's got to be someone who kind of looks dumb, but isn't actually dumb. So that said,
not too attractive.
You know who'd be a good Nancy? The chick from The Bear.
Oh yeah, really?
I don't know what her name is, but the girlfriend, whatever her name is.
Yeah,
she would be a good Nancy.
Uh huh. Maybe too old.
She too old. What?
Because it's got to be like kind of teenage.
Yeah, they have to be. I mean, I don't know teen.
Yeah,
actors.
I don't know teen actors. Either.
So let's just say for the time being that. The
director.
I think.
And is this a sequel?
No, it's got to be.
It's a reboot.
It's got a complete reboot because they ruined it the first time. You have to have the complete reboot. Okay. So that said, I think. And it can't be somebody too famous.
I got a good one. You go first.
Though. No, you go first because I'm still thinking.
James Wan.
James Wan's Frightened.
I did only because I think that he's good at fantasy.
He is,
and the scariest James Wan film is without a doubt, in my opinion,
The Conjuring.
Maybe am I misstepping? Is it not a James Wan film?
What were you gonna say?
Insidious.
Insidious is not James Wan.
It's James Wan Presents. God damn it! That always fooled me with that.
I think Lee Whannell did Insidious.
Dude, Insidious is fucking good.
Yeah,
and it's about sleep paralysis, so maybe it's too literal of a reference.
Oh, you're. Wait. Okay.
I thought it was him.
Okay. Wait.
But also, I think he's got the chops for it, dude. What's the one with the twins on the back of her head? Spoiler alert.
That is Malignant.
Yeah, Malignant.
Okay, no, you're right. Okay, my bad. James Wan directed the first Insidious, but Lee Whannell.
Yeah, the other ones are garbage. Yeah, Lee Whannell wrote it. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. The other ones are garbage anyway.
My problem. I think it's. I'm not disagreeing with you.
Okay.
But I think my only problem with James Wan is I don't think he's enough of a pervert. You need someone who's a little perverse.
Okay.
Like, there's got to be like
perverse is a better word.
Yeah, perverse. So you got to have somebody who's got like a weird like, which is why honestly I don't want. I know this is topical, but Zach Cracker's.
Yeah, Zach Cracker only because he's funny.
Because
he has
funny
a sketch comedy background.
Yeah, because you need.
Whereas, because I think like the other guys, the other bigwigs, like are too serious.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Robert Eggers or
Robert. You know who would fuck it up royally is fucking homeboy, the long legs guy. What's his fucking name?
Oh yeah,
Oz Perkins.
Yeah,
awful.
He is funny though.
He's funny.
Uh-huh.
But he's no. Although I'm probably going to see his new one. What's his new one called? It's called like the. I don't know.
Is it the one about the couple?
Oh, you know who? Okay, here's my hot take. The guy who did You're Next and The Guest.
Oh, yeah, shit. What's his name?
Fuck.
That's good.
That guy.
Hmm.
What's his name? Oh, my God. I think he should do it. Because he can.
Cheetah says long legs would be a good Freddy Krueger.
No. Oh, no, no. Long legs will never be a good anything, except
honestly though, Nicolas Cage kind of a good friend.
He's too old.
Yeah. Well, I think Goggins is primed to be our next Nick Cage.
I mean, yes, Adam Weingart should do the.
Yeah, but he's moved on to all those Godzilla movies.
But he can bring him back. He can bring him back.
I'm not an Adam Weingart fan.
He just needs to stop making those King Kong movies, and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Oh, we're almost out of time
here. The Guest is great, though.
The Guest is great.
And I think that it features one of my favorite underrated actors, Dan Stevens.
Dan Stevens is Freddy Krueger, bro.
That might be it.
Dan Stevens. He's it.
He's good.
He's fucking it.
Okay, we're running out of time. We want to remind you, Basement VHS Fest, August 30th, 4-Star Theater, Demons 2, From Beyond. Riccio, the story of Ricky.
Bo Wanzer
playing After From Beyond, special DJ set. We're going to take you out with some music, maybe. And we're going to be all set up there selling our brand new book, The Basement Tapes, published by VS Press. Please come. If you're in LA, Whammy in October. If you're in New York, Tammy and the T-Rex.
Low
in
Cinema.
September, Low Cinema. Yeah, it's been a pleasure convening with you all again.
We shall see you soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.